This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey all, hope you all are doing well out there, are staying safe and healthy. We are wishing you the best right now. We have another reboot episode for you, a festive reboot. You are about to listen to our Fabergé Eggs episode, originally released April 13th, 2017. A happy Easter if you celebrate. Yeah, enjoy the episode.
We are history, babe. Maria Fedorova, beloved wife of Alexander III, had a love for jeweled eggs, which her husband, Alexander III, knew from reading her diary. In 1885, to celebrate the 20th anniversary of their engagement, he commissioned a beautiful egg by a man named Fabergé. The egg was an enamel egg. Inside the egg was a golden yolk. Inside the yolk was a golden hen. Inside the hen was a diamond crown. On top of the crown was a golden ruby egg. And so began the tradition of Fabergé egg.
Wow. That was our lovely Sonia. And we are the art history babes. So we're talking about Fabergé eggs today, you guys.
Yeah, we're getting a little festive for the Easter / spring season.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what better way? And also, correct me if I'm wrong, Sonia's our authority on all things Russian. Isn't Easter's like the biggest holiday in Russia? It's like bigger than Christmas?
It's the biggest Russian Orthodox holiday because right. We don't have Christmas. Christmas is January 7th and it's like a very minor holiday.
Right.
So Easter is the end of a 7-week fast that I'm on right now where no one can eat animal products. So it's literally like the first time you can taste butter and cheese, which in like Russia is like the only joy you can have. So Easter's a really, really big deal.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. Did you guys ever have any like Easter traditions growing up?
We ate a lot of food. I remember that was my first time eating fruit jam. Was an Easter when I was 3 years old. My dad, who was in America, sent us fruit jam. So for us, it was just like a time where we could actually eat anything but like vegetables. So I, as a kid, I just remember it was like
root vegetables.
A festival of the mouth.
Do any of us have any Easter traditions? I wasn't raised necessarily in a religious background, but we were that kind of family that was like, well, it's Easter, I guess we got to do a thing. And so we used to do the whole thing. We'd have an Easter ham, which isn't that weird to eat ham on Easter? I thought pork was like forbidden or something.
No, it's Lent.
Oh,
Easter is when you can start.
Oh,
in Lent, like for the Lenten season, you're supposed to give something up,
right?
And you're also, you're not supposed to eat meat, but what it turned into over time was just not eating meat on Fridays, which apparently means you can still have fish. Like, so it became, it became this whole, like, so the Lent season, at least, you know, I mean, anyone who grew up Catholic, it's like, you eat fish on Fridays.
Right.
And yeah, but the original idea was that, because you're supposed to give something up. So like as a child, I'd give up like chocolate. Or
right.
Yeah. You give up something for Lent, and then Easter marks the end of Lent because it's like the day that, you know, Jesus came back from the dead. And then you can eat
whatever you want because yeah. Jesus is back.
Exactly.
Dude, one Easter, I remember I was dyeing a bunch of eggs. by myself because I was an only child, but I was having a great time. Like, I was like, this is so fun. I was watching Sailor Moon. It was just awesome. Great day. And my mom went to the store because she forgot cheesecloth. And she was like, I'm taking the ham out the oven, so watch the ham. And I was like, yeah, right. Like, I got to watch the ham, you know, like, what where's it going to go, you know? And I was just not paying attention at all. And our Cocker Spaniel, this little dog, jumped up high enough to pull the ham down from the kitchen counter, which you've been to my house, like, it's tall.
It's a huge counter.
It's a big counter. This dog dragged it down and outside and ate the entire ham.
Oh, dang.
The whole thing, dude.
Did it live?
Yeah. We had so we spent Easter in the emergency vet. And basically the dog was like twice as wide as like he normally is. The vet was just like, don't feed him for like 3 days or more because he's eaten enough to last him like a month.
And that's crazy.
It was crazy. That was.
So then the dog got to fast.
That was quite an Easter.
Yeah, for Easter, we would do, like, the typical things we would do. Like, I'd get an Easter basket.
Yeah.
And, like, my mom / the Easter bunny would hide eggs, like, around the house and stuff. And I'd wake up all excited, and I'd, like, search the house, like, I gotta get the eggs.
My
and
then, family still hides eggs.
Dude, you know,
it's just, like, more intense.
Yeah.
It's shit like that that, like, makes me want to have kids. Because it's just, like, like, holidays are so magical as a child. Like, I feel like it'd be so fun to do that stuff.
I think it was 2 years ago, my boyfriend's mom hid eggs around their backyard, and he and I had to find them. We're, like, grown-ass adults, right? But we were looking for eggs. It was fun.
I would like to know the origins of that tradition. But this episode, we're talking about a very, very expensive type of egg.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
The Fabergé eggs.
Ain't no plastic egg.
No, not at all.
Rhesus cup.
That does sound good, though.
I could go for that.
Or like a handful of jelly beans.
I only like the Starburst jelly beans.
I love the Starburst jelly beans.
Yeah.
They're so good.
And then I only really like the pink ones.
Oh my god, I saw the grossest thing ever at Target the other day. They have Oreos that are peat flavored.
Oh, I tried one.
Marshmallow
oh
peat flavored they had Oreos.
Them, they had them at my work last week, and I ate one, and it was really bad. It was literally just a peep inside of an
like,
Oreo cookie.
Which tastes like synthetic sweet stuff. Like, peeps are disgusting.
But can we, before we leave the peep topic, have you guys ever had Peep Wars?
No. What is that?
Okay, this is fun, and I kind of recommend everyone try it. So you take two peeps, and you put them on a plate. It's very messy. And you put toothpicks in their mouth, and then you put them in the microwave, and you microwave them until and they start, like, growing, and then one explodes, and the first one to explode shoots his little toothpick at the other one, and then it deflates.
How did
I feel like
someone taught me it. I don't know.
I feel like sticking a peep in a microwave could cause, like, some kind of nuclear reaction.
Yeah, I don't think I ate them. It was just more entertaining.
You're just amplifying the cancer. You're gonna get super cancer.
Microwave
super peep. Cancer.
Microwave radiation super cancer.
That's gonna show up on, like, questionnaires for people who have cancer in the future.
Did you microwave a peep? From 2006. Call Bergen Jones.
Bergen Jones.
I like your fake lawyer name.
I know, right? All right, so let's get into this. Fabergé eggs. The location of our story is St. Petersburg, Russia. Carl Fabergé. I always pronounce it Fabergé.
Me too.
But that's actually wrong. It's Fabergé.
I don't like it.
Fabergé.
I don't like that.
Yeah, so there you go.
I'm going to keep calling him Fabergé. Anarchy.
Carl Fabergé, master jeweler, born 1846. His father was also a master jeweler.
Huh.
So he just took up after his dad. At 26, Carl took over his father's firm of jeweling.
Jewelers.
And then in 1882, the Russian Industry and Art Exhibition in Moscow is where Fabergé first gains recognition. He has a stand where he's selling different objects that he's crafted, and the Tsarina Maria Feodorovna How was that?
Fyodorovna.
Fyodorovna bought a pair of cufflinks from him. So this is kind of like his claim to fame. Like, and in 1885, a few years later, he's awarded the Imperial Warrant by the Romanovs. So the Imperial Warrant is like, he's like their, you know, a court appointed artist jeweler. Of some kind. Yeah, he's their jeweler.
The court jeweler.
And Easter 1885, Tsar Alexander III and Tsarina Fyodorovna are celebrating their 20th wedding anniversary, and Alexander commissions a gift from Carl Fabergé. Ends up being the first of a grand total of 50. I also, in another source, said 54, but
I saw 53.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it gets tricky because there's like the imperial eggs that were made for the royal family, and then there were some that were made by Fabergé, but not necessarily for the imperial family, because I was having the same trouble keeping track.
Yeah.
Because it would be like, there's 53 known, or 43 known, and then there's like 10 missing, and it's like, that doesn't add
that
up.
Doesn't
those
work,
are
yeah.
Those are made up numbers. They were approximate.
I mean, the most legit source that I'm getting a lot of this information from said that there were 50 imperial Fabergé eggs. So we're just going to go with that.
50 is fine.
The first of these eggs is the hen egg.
That's a lovely story, right?
Yes.
Sonia most excellently described this egg for us, but we're going to look at it again.
Yes.
Because it's really awesome.
It's pretty cool. And it's interesting because the evolution of these eggs over time, like each one is its own thing and they've changed so much. And definitely over time, they became a lot more opulent and a lot more
decadent.
Yes, a lot more decadent. So Alexander III gives the Tsarina this hen egg as a anniversary present, and there is a surprise inside, as Sonia said, within the egg. And the Empress is so pleased, like she's just giddy about it, that the eggs become an Easter tradition. Each year, the Emperor commissions another egg from Fabergé.
For his wife?
Yeah, always for his wife.
Good job, Alexander III.
Like, wow,
yeah.
He was a good husband.
Yes, every year for his wife on Easter. And there are so many of them, and we're going to kind of go into detail about a few of them a little later on, but just like a couple. In 1890, this one's actually probably my favorite, the Danish Palace's egg. It's this beautiful pink egg with like gold trim, and like the surprise inside is this beautiful series of like miniature paintings. How many are there? Like 10.
So what would that
panels.
Be?
Like
a triptych? It would be
a deck. It's kind of amazing.
It's really beautiful. And then, let's see, 1894, the Renaissance egg is presented to the Tsarina. And this would be the last egg that would be presented by Tsar Alexander III, as he died of kidney disease later that year.
Aww.
Yeah, so kind of a bummer.
Dang it.
So at this point in time, if you are familiar with Russian history at all, this is when shit gets crazy. Because his fairly notoriously unprepared son, Nicholas II, takes the throne. And at his coronation, a stampede broke out and 1,300 people died.
Oh,
yeah.
I just remember. 1,300 people. 1,300. Yep.
Yes.
There's a real stampede.
1,300 people were crushed.
Yes.
That happens. Stampedes get crazy.
I believe it, but that's so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a really awesome Netflix series. It's like 3 episodes, but it's all about the Age of the Tsars. I think it's called The Age of the Tsars.
That sounds dope.
I don't know if it's still up, but it's really good, and it talks about all of this, like, really in-depth, and it's really awesome and interesting.
To check that out.
Highly recommend.
So the stampede happens on his coronation day, and yeah, he just doesn't really handle it well. Like, he kind of just ignores it and doesn't handle the situation well, which makes people not happy with him just right out the gate. And then over time, he's given the nickname Bloody Nicholas after Bloody Sunday, which in my research
Bloody Sunday, there's been, like, a lot of massacres due to Bloody Sunday.
Sunday's there like a
day. There are so many Bloody Sundays in the history of massacres. So
is it just like, you know, people are working all week, and then they need Saturday to decompress before they just massacre on Sunday?
Yeah. And then, like, Monday is right around the corner, and so it's just Sunday, and you're just like,
angry.
I just can't take it anymore, and then it just happens.
It's probably my favorite U2 song, Bloody Sunday.
Sunday, Bloody Sunday.
I did not know you guys knew U2 songs.
Who doesn't know U2?
Oh, I didn't. I don't know that song.
Oh, man.
I know of U2. I know a few songs.
How can you not know of U2? Bono is, like, everywhere.
I just know Bono has glaucoma.
I know, but I'm saying I don't ever listen to U2.
I didn't know he had glaucoma.
That's why he always wears those glasses.
I didn't know that.
That's real. I thought it was a fashion choice.
No, dude, I mean, he looks fashionable, but he's got, like, an eye problem.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Sorry, Bono. If you're listening.
Yeah.
No. Bono's fine. He's okay.
Like, I can buy new eyes.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
So, Nicholas II, or Bloody Nicholas, as some like to call him, was married to Empress Alexandra, who was not as well-liked as the previous Tsarina. Previous Tsarina was, like, very personable and kind of loved by all, and Alexandra was just not at all. They had four daughters, and then probably the most commonly known thing about this family. Their son, Alexei, had hemophilia. So it was the, you know, the, is it a prince? Like,
Is he called a prince?
Okay. So yeah, it was, you probably learned it in your high school history class, like the prince with hemophilia, and they had to be really careful to keep him protected because he was obviously the heir to the throne.
Dude, and that's when crazy-ass Rasputin comes in.
Oh, Rasputin. I want to talk about Rasputin. He doesn't really apply here, but man, Rasputin is so interesting.
Well, that's why they brought him in, is because he claimed that he could, like, cure his hemophilia.
Yeah.
And he miraculously made him stop bleeding this one time, and so the whole family was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had that magic penis. So you can talk about that in the episode. Yeah. That's a real fact.
That is a thing.
Have we gone over that before?
I don't know.
Have
I don't
we
think
talked
we've
about
ever...
Oh, we did.
I don't know. I don't remember that. Talking about
I don't
him,
think but... we've ever talked about him on the show, but there are, for more information, there are, like, multiple documentaries about Rasputin on YouTube. I went on a kick a while back, so you should check those out.
Maybe one time we just talked about it. I don't know why I thought it was on the show.
I'd like
we
to
talked about. Isn't it like in a jar somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to talk about it, and it's like enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe it wasn't on the show, but we've definitely talked about it.
Yeah, baby.
Got her weird look on her face. Right
now. That's adorable, baby. Yeah.
No, it's not adorable.
It's more just fascination.
Yeah.
No. It's like the ugliest thing I've ever seen, to be honest.
Yeah, Rasputin.
What's an old dick in a jar, Jen? What does it look like? Doesn't have that blast of crunch anymore, you know?
Came way before dick in a box.
The original dick in a container. All right, so Rasputin. Nicholas II continues the tradition of the Fabergé eggs within the royal household by requesting two eggs each year, one for his mother and one for his wife.
Oh.
Yeah. What a good guy. Nice.
Nicholas, by the way, was the most uncreative czar. He did everything his dad did because he was so unprepared to rule that he literally looked at everything his dad did and tried to do the exact same thing. That's why he got one for his mom. And then he was like, but wait, if I was my dad, I would be giving it to my wife. And that's literally the way he thought about everything that he did.
Yeah, to, like, think through the logic. Yeah. He was kind of like an everyman. Like, he just liked
like yeah. chopping wood and stuff. Like
he didn't want to be the czar.
He didn't want to be the czar.
Who would want to be the czar?
I know, right?
That sounds like a terrible
Well, that's the paradox is like the people who want to be in power are the people who shouldn't be in power. And then,
that happens.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
Far too often, yeah.
Dang it.
Hence our moment in history.
No. No.
I almost didn't think about it today.
It's a good day if you zero get through J's the day.
I'm going to start like one of those like charts or little yeah. like dry erase
boards. And so just depressingly walk over every day and be like, oh
man. So he's commissioning 2 eggs a year, one for his mother, the Dowager, and one for Empress Alexandra. First pair are the rosebud egg and the blue serpent egg, which are both, like, just stupid beautiful. Like, they're stunning. The colors are gorgeous. The rosebud egg, interestingly, eventually ended up in the possession of Grace Kelly, Princess of Grace of Monaco.
What?
Yeah.
Huh.
And it was like, her prized possession.
Right. It would be.
Right? Fun fact, I have the same birthday as Grace Kelly.
Ooh. Scorpios.
There, yeah.
That's the sound of the little tail.
The Scorpio sound effect.
I prefer, like, sting. Like a sting type of annoyance.
It's onomatopoeia, okay?
Cha-cha-cha. Loose change in a jar.
Okay, so Fabergé and the Romanovs were tight, which led, like, they had a close relationship, which led to these very nuanced, intentional gifts, especially over time. These eggs, they got really personal, like, the stories they were trying to tell or the little surprises within them were very relevant to what was going on in their lives at that time. A shop was open in London to sell Fabergé products. They made all kinds of stuff. They made silverware, trinkets, candy boxes, and cigarette cases, which, like...
That would be cool.
Having a Fabergé cigarette case is, like, the swaggiest thing I can think of. Yeah. Like, how dope would that be? And they're really, like, sleek. Like, they're not as, like, ornate as you think. They're just, like, simple, but have, like, some kind of, like...
Filigree?
Yeah, like, engraved designs. But, yeah, I want one. So, you know, if someone wants to send me one of those.
Yeah, just send it. Wine and Fabergé cigarette boxes.
Yeah. At this time, English society and the English royal family start to become enchanted by Fabergé as well. It's starting to gain a lot more traction in other parts of the Western world. The Rothschilds and the Nobels both commissioned eggs. In 1904 to 1905, egg production kind of comes to a halt because Russia was defeated in the Russo-Japanese War. That's when Bloody Sunday occurred, was in this time frame. So they put the egg making to a stop for
right.
a minute.
We can't make eggs right now.
I mean, we just
guys.
Can't be We're doing that.
We're too damn sad.
Yep. In 1906, production resumes with the swan egg, which they are really stepping up their game at this point because the surprise in it is a little automaton swan. Yeah.
What?
That, like, yeah, like a little swan robot, basically.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Isn't that yeah. cool?
That's like the Kinder Egg of the future.
But in the past. But in the past, yeah. That's very like steampunk.
Don't let the steampunk people know about it. They're going to co-opt Fabergé eggs. And
if they haven't already, I feel like they probably have. I wouldn't mind doing an episode on steampunk. It's a very unique aesthetic.
Yeah.
And people who love it really love it.
But it's
all
like Fedora M'lady. Like,
I know.
Oh, God. Like, sorry. I just know so many people that I do not like who are into that whole thing. Yeah. And they kind of ruined it for me. Like
why is your course out of a grandfather clock? Like, why don't you just chill? Like, it's cool.
How did you do that in the first place?
Enough.
For sure. I watched one episode of the show Steampunked. On Netflix recently, just out of curiosity. Ashton Kutcher is steampunk.
Yeah. He's wearing like a mechanical monocle. And
oh my god, I love this image. But no, it's like a, I don't know, like a game show, like
Project Runway.
Yeah.
Costume.
Exactly. Yeah. It's Project Runway, but it's for steampunk. And what's cool about it is it's just like, while I totally agree, like that, yeah, the you nailed it with the fedora.
My lady fedora.
My lady fedora.
Yeah. Like, I totally understand, like, that gets frustrating. But what's cool about it is it's just like these people that really enjoy making and like want to create this whole world of this certain style that's like retro futuristic. So it's, I think it's interesting.
So is this our steampunk egg here?
It is kind of steampunky. That was not intentional.
It looks like a Nazi egg to me.
Yeah.
Ooh. And also you can see the militarized themes for the post-war era.
This is a cool egg we're looking at right now.
Yeah.
Is this, what egg is this?
Sorry. This is...
We'll let you speak now.
This egg was created in 1914. And it is the World War One egg. It is the steel military egg.
Is that what it is called?
Yes. And it has a very different aesthetic, as you can tell. It's very militaristic. And the surprise, the image inside, is a image, like a, I think it's a painting of the Tsar and his son giving orders to the troops. So
wow. It's mini. Very small portrait. Yes. Of... This egg looks like it would take flight. Like, it's got these four kind of, they look like
little bullets.
No, they look like, you know, like the things that are on the side of a spaceship. What the hell
Rocket jet propeller, guys.
It looks like this thing could take off.
So yeah, it's a very different aesthetic. We'll have an image of this up on our website for sure. But very different from the pink, ornate, opulent, like Fabergé eggs that came before it. Yeah, and it's like I said, it's meant for a very specific time, and it's meant to represent what's going on in the royal family's life. And yeah, it's kind of steampunky.
Yeah.
It kind of is.
So this was given to the wife and the mother?
Yeah.
I wonder if that year they were like,
I've been like, oh, you shouldn't have.
I was actually like trying not to think about the war right now. It's like my birthday. Yeah, so.
They go from an animatronic egg or swan to it's a like war egg.
You shouldn't have. You really shouldn't.
You really shouldn't. I'm sure a lot of you know the end of the story, but if you don't, things don't really turn out well for the Romanovs. The Bolshevik Revolution is a thing, led by Lenin. The Bolsheviks capture the family, the entire family, and lock them in a room and brutally execute them. Like, can't really put it any simpler than that. Like,
it sucked, you know?
It's pretty awful.
Yeah. There was, like, women and children, you know? Yeah. It was kind of...
They just, like, locked them in a room and just gunned them all down.
Hardcore.
Which is a total bummer. Fabergé himself was in danger of execution just from being so close to the family, but he ends up being just exiled to Switzerland. And I think Sonia is actually going to talk a little bit more about this, how the Bolsheviks took over his legacy. But he dies in 1920 in Switzerland, so not too much longer after. And then Lenin and Stalin kind of just sold a whole bunch of Russian art, and they like took over all of Russian culture pretty much. And what's the famous quote? There's a famous quote by I think Lenin that's like loot the looters or something like that. So it's this idea of taking back,
reclaiming.
Yeah, because that's so, you know, yeah, exactly. Like reclaiming what has been claimed by this dynasty. And then yeah, so they sell a lot of art, including a lot of eggs. Armin Hammer, he got in there and pretty much did exactly what a capitalist does and capitalized off of these eggs. He pretended. Jen's very confused. Yes,
is that the baking soda guy?
I actually don't know like the whole story, but I think so. Yeah, I mean he was a captain of industry basically.
So Arm and Hammer stole the hammer and sickle. That's cool. All right.
Oh, that's good. I actually don't know a lot about Arm and Hammer, but. His name is Armand Hammer.
I had a similar thought. Yeah.
There's all these like little sparks were going off in my brain. Like, wait. I'm going to look him up right now.
Do it. But he got in there and he actually, it's funny, he pretended to be a communist, even though he was like a capitalist incarnate. Like, he pretended to be a communist and got as many eggs as he could and capitalized off them eggs. Malcolm Forbes also collected a bunch of them. He had like 11 at one time. He had like hella eggs. And it's one of those things I'm like, did you even care? Like, or like, did you even care about the eggs, or was it just like this conquest? Like, you're just trying to collect as many of the Fabergé eggs as possible. You know what I mean?
But probably the latter.
Yeah. He had a lot of them. Many of the eggs have made their way back to St. Petersburg now. There's a Fabergé museum that houses a lot of them. 42 imperial eggs survived the revolution, and a missing imperial egg was recently found, like, I think within the last decade.
Yeah, by a yokel at, like, an antique fair, and he didn't know what it was, and he bought it for, like, less than $1,000, and then it got appraised at, like, $7
million. Oh, my God.
And this yokel is still nameless, so if you're that yokel, congratulations.
Congratulations, yokel.
You done it.
Ultimately, like, it's entirely possible that the seven that are still missing were melted down and they will never be seen again. Like, that is a thing that could happen.
Armin Hammer did not.
I know this is on Wikipedia, explicitly, like, not. I know this is so off topic, but dude, the guy named Armand Hammer actually bought a considerable amount of stock in the company that manufactures Armand Hammer. However, Armand Hammer's company brand name did not originate with Armand Hammer. It was in use 31 years before Hammer was born. What kind of crazy coincidence is that? He's like, I'm just going to invest in it because it sounds like my name.
That is nuts. The company started 30 years before he was born?
Yeah.
What if his parents, like, heard an ad or something and they were like,
that's a great name.
That's a great name. That's hilarious, though. God. Oh, man.
I love that kind
of
stuff.
I do, too. Kind of a similarly serendipitous thing. So there's technically seven missing Imperial Fabergé eggs still. They easily could have been melted down or whatever and will never be seen again. But it's also just as possible that they're out there in the world in, some yokel's house.
some old babushka.
Yeah.
Is like coveting one. Yeah. It's just like, my precious.
Yeah, they could be anywhere. Literally anywhere. And like there could be one next door. It's entirely possible because a lot of them made their way to the United States at one point. So in a kind of a fun way, it's like hunting for Easter eggs. It's like a actual, I know, you could stumble upon one. So I think that's pretty much all I have to say. Sonia is going to talk a little bit more about what these meant for kind of the dynasty and all of that good stuff.
So a little note about when Fabergé, during the revolution, so Carl Fabergé was exiled, but the Bolsheviks, they nationalized his company. So technically, Carl Fabergé couldn't make any more Fabergé eggs because the Bolsheviks had basically nationalized his company and taken his entire shop. And what I find really interesting about these Fabergé eggs is they really are like a metaphor and a narrative for like the Russian ridiculousness that we're still living now, where like a few people have all the money and then everyone else has nothing. Like, these eggs had little tiny portraits of all of Nicholas's weird sick kids. And then everyone else was like rationing rye bread and eating dirt and then like had a revolution because they were so poor. So the Forbes collection was bought by Russian oligarchs in an egomaniacal ploy that everything that is Russian must return to Russia by the richest Russians for the richest Russians.
So when was this?
This was in 2003, I think. So the Forbes heirs decided to auction off the eggs. And before it could go to auction, mysteriously, someone made a side deal, as Russians are so famous for doing. So this guy, I think Vasily Vaskolovich or something, he's like the Vosprov
guy.
Victor Veselberg, duh. So he just bought all these eggs for $100 million, like way above market value, as a power statement that all Russian things belong in Russia of historical value. Mm. So it's, again, Russia's concentrated wealth and everyone else is starving. So,
so there
Russia
that is.
2017, welcome. And the new revolution is coming.
Like,
and the new revolution is coming. So
dang.
That's
once
crazy.
We overthrow Putin, we'll find those lost seven eggs. Mark my words.
Dude, I bet you Putin has the eggs.
Oh, probably.
Putin, better hand over those eggs.
God damn it.
I want to see them. I want to see what you've done with those eggs. So what did these oligarchs do after purchasing the eggs? Like, where do they live now?
So the guy that bought the eggs, he said that he didn't have them at his house. In typical Russian fashion, you never want to tell anyone where you have anything valuable. So he supposedly made a small museum for them that's a private museum that, like, only other rich people can go to. So, like, you can't make this shit up. Like, it's Russia's crazy. Supposedly, they're going to make it public, but, like, they're open, like, one day a week and it's on leap year or something. So,
yeah. I'm learning so much about Russian culture.
I know. I appreciate it. I feel like I don't know enough.
So my grandma had three of these little replica eggs made out of, like, you know, glass and, like, whatever, tin. And she would just show me them sometimes. Be like, yeah, you know, they killed those guys. So, you know, that's why we celebrate Easter. So happy Easter, everybody.
Does your grandma still have these eggs? Are they cherished or are they kind of like a kitschy sort of thing?
I think they're like tchotchkes. So you can buy them at like the market.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny too because I think that aren't these replicas sort of, aren't they the kind of thing that you would see at the airport if you land like in St. Petersburg?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
Duty free, guys.
Right.
Don't pay tax.
I guess we should talk about some of these eggs then.
Yeah.
We've mentioned a few. And they are stunning.
There's some good-ass chocolate. Who brought this?
Oh, yeah. Sonia brought the dank chocolate, you guys.
Trader Jose's, baby.
And what is that in them? Like macadamia nuts?
Some kind of.
Oh, hazelnuts.
Hazelnuts. Yum.
Hazelnuts, that's some decadent chocolate.
Yeah, it is. It's like thick, too.
Right.
Like,
you know, you got the whole nut.
None of that chocolate.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so some of these eggs that we know and love. We've discussed the hen egg, which is the first, and I would say maybe the most beloved. It's you know, it's adorable.
It's kind of, compared to the other eggs, it's kind of minimalistic.
It's humble.
It's a humble egg, yeah.
You know what? This egg reminds me of something that would have been made by, like, Le Corbusier or something. It's like a Mies van der Rohe egg. Like, it's very minimalist. It's very modern.
Yeah, it's just, when it's closed, when it's in its egg form, it's just like white. It just looks like an egg.
It's a white egg. But from there, they get really decadent. There's this one, it's called the Lilies of the Valley egg.
Ooh.
So this one's really beautiful. It looks,
oh wow,
like a lily, closed, like a closed lily, and it's encrusted with jewels. And when it opens, the surprise is that you twist a pearl button on the egg and three portraits pop up from the inside. It's a portrait of Nicholas at the top, and then their two oldest daughters, Olga and Tatiana. And this way, Nicholas's wife could gaze upon her adoring husband and her beautiful daughters. Very beautiful. What else do we have here? There's this crazy looking one that doesn't even look like an egg, to be honest. It's called the Bay Tree Egg.
Oh, yeah. This one is dope.
It's big. It's actually pretty big. So it's a little bit under a foot tall. That's a big egg.
Yeah, tiny.
And it's made of all kinds of different jewels. There's diamonds, citrines, amethysts, rubies, agate, and pearls. Not to mention gold, enamel, and actual feathers. So the Tsar Nicholas gave this egg to his widowed mother in 1911, and on this egg, which really looks like a tree, it's made up of these small leaves and jewels and stuff. So on the tree, there's a little gold winding mechanism, and so you turn it, and then the top part of the egg would, out of the top part of the egg, a little feathered nightingale would pop out and sing a little song and flap its wings and move its beak.
What?
And then when it was done with its little song, it would all descend back down. So that's ridiculous. Way to outdo every Mother's Day gift ever.
I know, right?
Like, I hope my mom's not listening to this episode because she'll be like, "Never get me anything like that." Another one that is just super amazing is this peacock egg. So this peacock egg took a long time to make, 3 years of trial and error before it was ready to be given to the Empress Maria Fyodorovna. Killing it with the pronunciation.
You got it. Yeah. You did it.
And it's a crystal egg. And when you open it, there's a golden tree inside. And upon the golden tree is perched a golden peacock. And the peacock can actually be removed from the tree, and you could wind it up, and it would walk around and spread its tail. How do they do this?
I don't know.
This is before 3D printing or anything. Like, these are tiny little metal pieces. It's crazy.
And the Tour de Force, the winter egg of 1913. This egg is amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's so beautiful. I've never seen anything like it. It is the most expensive Fabergé egg that was ever made, coming in at 24,600 rubles, which is roughly about 3 million American dollars today.
What?
No, this is all made to be like updated to 2017
monetary standards. I was like, our ruble is crashing through the floor. Like,
that can't possibly be right. You sold 24,000
rubles? No.
That's a loaf of expensive, like, rye bread at Nugget or whatever. Yeah. No. This is all translated to our dollars today. This egg was carved of rock crystal. It is as thin as glass. And so on this rock crystal, it's embellished with these snowflake designs. It is ornamented with diamonds and platinum, and it's made to resemble frost. The egg is perched upon a sort of made to look like melting ice. It's more of the rock crystal. And there is also platinum and diamonds on it. And so you open this egg, and inside there is a basket of flowers, and the basket itself is made up of platinum encrusted with diamonds. Inside are wood anemones. So the flowers themselves are made of a white quartz. There's a nephrite, gold garnets, and then they're actually emerging from this like moss. And the moss is it's actually green gold. And so the overall height of this egg is 14 centimeters with the base. And it's actually set with 3,246 diamonds. So
that's hella diamonds.
It's decadent. It's opulent. It's magnificent. It was actually sold in New York City in 2002 for $9.6 million. And the buyer was one Hamad bin Khalifa Al Thani of Qatar, otherwise known as Wiz Khalifa. No, I'm just kidding.
would be really happy if Wiz Khalifa had that fucking Fabergé egg.
It was not
Wiz Khalifa. That would be amazing.
But Wiz, if you're out there, I think that you could take old Khalifa from Qatar and give him a run for his money, okay? That's all I have on eggs of note.
Eggs of note. Should that be the name of this episode?
Yeah.
Eggs of note.
So leaving it on that Christie's auction, I'm going to hand it off to Nat.
All right. So to continue on with auctions, we're kind of jumping to, because you talked about the winter egg.
Yeah, so okay. The winter egg.
So the winter egg was 2002 at Christie's, and then in 2007 at Christie's, the Rothschild egg was sold. That was made in 1902 for $8.9 million. I think you said it was over $9 million for the winter egg, right?
Yeah, the winter egg brought in $9.6 million.
So I think, this is in pounds.
Oh.
Right?
Which would be
more.
A little bit more in dollars. I don't really know.
And we'd have to look back at 2007 and how it was. But it's generally like...
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It's more money than I have. So
it's more money than I will ever have.
It's the most money that a Fabergé egg has been bought up till this time or that time. I don't know.
Okay.
They're expensive, guys. There's not a lot of information.
This is like stuff that... People like us do not even, I don't know, it's like,
You'll never touch a Fabergé.
Like, I don't even want to know
At this point, because there's such a small number of them, and they're like, there are people in the world that are legitimate specialists in Fabergé eggs. Their entire life is fucking Fabergé eggs. So there are a few, like, museums in the world, or like, collectors in the world that, you know, are fighting over these eggs. So it they're practically priceless, like, yeah, because it's just, yeah, there's like a couple of people that can actually acquire them.
Which, well, you, yeah, guys alluded to the story earlier about the farmer who was trying to sell scrap metal and couldn't sell this stupid little egg and was so frustrated, and then Googled it and found out it was worth like $33 million or something insane. And
yeah, I think I think it might be the same guy. I'm not sure. But okay, so I got a lot of my information off of, this is just a good shout out all around, there's a series on Netflix called Raiders of the Lost Art. Have you guys watched this yet?
No, but you told me about it.
It sounds amazing.
So good. Every episode is about, I mean,
I'm going to go home and watch that.
It's about lost art. It's about, like, art mysteries. It's so good. And they have a Fabergé egg episode. And that's where I got a ton of my information.
Oh, my God.
And I'm pretty sure it's the same guy, but I don't know for sure. But they tell this story. And when the collector came to the United States to meet with this guy who was trying to sell this little egg, who, like, he didn't even really know what he had until he had it, there was a picture of when he walked into his house and the little cute little gold Fabergé egg was just sitting right next to a cupcake, like an actual cupcake. I know, it was super cute.
I wonder if it's the same guy, because this guy, it was in 2015, so it's pretty recent.
Yeah, it might be the same
and
guy.
Yeah, he was he thought he would be able to sell it for about $500 and they would just melt it down. People weren't buying it, and so he got frustrated and Googled it. But this means that he was on the verge of, like, selling this to be melted. Like, this one could have just been gone. It was forever. That close.
And no one would have known.
And they thought it was gone. So this particular egg, they thought, since 1922, had been missing, because there was, like, some story that they had sold it and researchers thought it was gone. And then they found it on an auction list in 2011 and realized that, like, there was still hope it was out there. So then this guy, I think, found an article while researching it that was talking about how, oh, wait, this egg is still out there. And he was like, holy shit, I have it. So it's a very cute, like, oh, fuck. So there was a funny part in the article where they say that he was way overestimating how much he could get if he melted it down, but he was way underestimating its inherent value. So it was just, like, this weird backwards. Like, it's really, like, in material, it's not worth that much, but in what it is, it's worth an insane amount. Like what I was saying, it's pretty much priceless.
You just summed up the art market in, like, two sentences.
Exactly. And I mean, at least these are precious materials. A lot of the art market is inflated based on stuff that costs pretty much nothing.
It's like Picasso drew something on, like, a kitchen napkin.
For real.
Spilled wine on it and, like, put out a cigarette on it. And it's worth, like, for the millions of dollars.
And then we get into our modern day capitalist society, so you can get little Fabergé egg charms, like Sonia was saying, anywhere. You can get charm bracelets, you can get all these things, or you can get a real Fabergé egg charm, which can go from $3,600 to $7,000 on their website. And they only have, like, 10 little models of them.
No, it's definitely... What I thought was so interesting in researching this and even just, like, finding out more about Fabergé eggs is my contemporary understanding of Fabergé eggs came very much from just, like, you know, contemporary culture, like television shows. And, you know, just, like, you hear about Fabergé eggs and they're always associated with just being really fucking rich, right? Mm-hmm. Really rich people have Fabergé eggs. And I didn't really even understand what they were for the longest time. And that's kind of what it is now. It's people... It's like a status symbol to buy something Fabergé at this point.
Yeah, it's a brand. It's a name.
It's a brand, it's like Cartier, it's like a Mont Blanc pen. Yeah. Like, it's
if you really want a charm bracelet, you can knock yourself out. Go to their website. To close out, we can talk about this most recent egg, which Sonia knows a little bit about.
So the Fabergé name was sold all around after, after the Bolsheviks gave it up and everything. Was sold from in Africa, and then now it's run by, like, the two great granddaughters of the original Fabergé, Carl Fabergé, who designed this egg for auction in Qatar, I believe. Qatar, right?
I don't know if it was in Qatar, but it was made in the Qatar style. So apparently they had established a style that was associated with Qatar.
Which,
so,
you know, take a look at this. If you look at the original eggs, they tell a story. There's some kind of meaning to it.
Well, and they're symbolic of, what did it say, like, trust and love or something. They have, like, a meaning, like, a very important meaning directly related to the people they were made for.
Right.
So they're personal. We even talk about the World War One egg. I'm looking at it right now. They're very personal, albeit weird.
This egg, this is just like, I don't know, imagine like rolling chewing gum and a bunch of pearls. Like, it's just pearls and gold, and inside, what's the secret surprise? It's another pearl. Like, it's so tacky and weird, and they've completely lost their edge. So, but this egg, I think, auctioned off for like some $2 million price, but to some oil heir.
We have a nice little diagram going from the hen egg to the, what was it, the lily? The lily egg to the pearl. So I do have to give it to them, though, that they at least tried to emulate the original egg in color scheme. And when you see them side by side, like, you're kind of like, oh, they went back to the white and gold, like the simplicity of definitely. That. Definitely. But yeah, when it lacks the meaning, it's just really...
Yeah, and it's not like it's like an ugly thing. It's beautiful, but it's not... It doesn't have the character that the other Fabergé eggs...
It's just kind of like beautiful just to be beautiful.
Yeah.
There's no... You know, exactly. It's not being, like, gifted to, like, someone important or anything cool. like that. I think
Sonia nailed it. The worst part is that, like, it's... The thing about these Fabergé eggs is that they have this little surprise inside, and the surprise is just another pearl.
Yeah.
That's not a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. Plus, this was made to be auctioned off. Like, the original Fabergé eggs, it was made for a family by somebody that knew the family, was intimate with them. So it has that personal feel. When you look at them, you're seeing something... Their beauty is that it's made something intimate. Like, you're like, looking through someone's, like, stuff, like, their private, like, album or something like that. This is just something that everyone that looks at it sees the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of a shame that they even tried to redo it, is really what it comes down to.
But it's a thing.
It's a thing. It's nice to look at.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Definitely. But it's well-crafted. Like, it's not...
Yeah.
Not bad looking.
Where's the mechanical peacock? I mean,
let's be real. Nothing's moving. We're over it.
I want, like, a sentient, like, little robot, like, gorilla coming out of it.
Gorilla baby. You heard it, Fabergé.
That's what we want, Fabergé.
Those are our demands.
Give us a little gorilla or nothing.
I want a gorilla Fabergé egg.
Can it be the gorilla girls?
Ooh.
That'd be great.
That would be so cool.
And the little gorilla girl comes out and just, like, you know, protests. See, now, make an egg like that, and I will not spend millions of dollars on it because I'm poor, but I won't be mad.
But I'd be excited about it.
Yeah, I'd be excited about it.
Is that all we got on eggs?
I think that's all we got. I think we talked the shit out of these
I know. Eggs. They're cool, though. So we'll do some listener mail. Oh, also, before we do listener mail, we talked about Easter and stuff. We're actually recording on Passover, so, like, want to tell everyone happy Passover.
Happy Passover. What's a Seder? Like, S-E-D-E-R.
I think it's the meal.
Seder's the meal.
Seder's the meal, right?
Yeah.
I saw this really funny post on Instagram. It was like Seder house rules. Get it?
Like cider house rules.
Yeah.
That's clever.
It was good.
Now, everything I know about Passover was from the episode of Rugrats about Passover.
when he broke his spaghetti.
Grandpa Boris was always breaking his... Like, I don't know what, and Tommy would call it his spaghetti. It's like, did you hear? Grandpa Boris broke his spaghetti. It was Boris and Minka, like, the most, like, racist stereotypes.
Yeah, right.
Oh, and don't get me started, because...
Like, Eastern European Jews.
Hey, Arnold, Mr. Kokoschka. Oh, yeah. So if you know what Kokoschka means, like poop, it means, like, feces. So my mom, when I would watch Hey Arnold, when I first came to America, was like, don't you ever forget, this is what they think of us. They think we're garbage.
Oh,
don't you ever forget it.
I hate that.
It's Kokoschka. I get it.
Mr. Kokoschka, I don't think was Jewish. And I also
No, he was Russian.
He wasn't Russian, though. He was like...
He was red-faced, drunk, and borrowing money. They never said what he was, but we knew what he was, Jen. We knew.
You know what? I'm going to concede on this.
Yeah, I think Sonia knows what she's talking about.
If you're listening to Nickelodeon, I will never forget. Ever.
It was rough. Was like, you couldn't even, like, read.
I barely remember.
Me too. Well, I binge all these watched
the whole series last summer, so there you go.
But yeah, happy Passover to all of you celebrating. I'm also going to immediately, after an unrecording,
research Passover because I feel like that's an important thing to know.
I want to know more about Passover.
Or if you want to email us and tell us about your Easter or Passover traditions, we'd love to hear about that.
That'd be awesome.
Okay. So, listener mail. Hello, ladies. I listened to your color episodes yesterday, and today my Facebook happened to be full of color theory discussions amongst my artist friends. One of the links posted had this tidbit, which is the first I've heard this mentioned in this particular way in my many years of reading on the subject. The idea that the physical tension exerted by the eye when reading longer wavelengths due to thickening of the lens being what leads to a feeling of active or engaged versus the relaxed state of the eye when reading cooler hues equating to calmness is the part I found most interesting and likely to explain for the commonly held mood response. So we talked about this in our color theory episode, how certain colors tend to be associated and tend to instigate, you know, calmness or different emotions or anger or whatever. So this is what she's referring to. Joy Turner Luke offers an explanation for the depth effect that has become popular recently. Warm colors are advancing because their focal length is longer than cool hues, which is the cause of chromatic aberration. All hues cannot be perfectly focused at the same time. The eye focuses slightly differently on long wavelengths, reds, than on short wavelengths, blues. The lens becomes slightly fatter and more curved to focus on red in comparison to when it is focusing on blue or green. When the eye focuses on nearby objects, it makes a similar but larger change than it does when focusing on red. The muscles that control the lens are most relaxed when we gaze off into space. This small difference in focus may account for the fact that blue and green seem more relaxing and to recede slightly in space. Anyway, thought you might get a kick out of that. And she also put a link to an essay about it, which we'll put on our sources for this episode.
Yeah, I want to read that.
So you can check that out if you're interested. But
that's amazing.
Right? And I think Layo? It's a cool name. L-A-Y-I-L. I'm not quite sure.
Layil.
Layil?
I don't know. It sounds really...
It's cool, though.
We're probably butchering your name, baby girl, but thank you for the information.
That's amazing. But that makes sense. That makes sense with, like, evolution. Because if you think about it, like, back when we were in, like, the bush, like, looking at the sky, looking at the stars, that's calming. So that would make sense that we'd evolve to be calmed by that, where, like, red or blood. We think, like, this is cause for alarm. We need to, like,
fire.
Something wrong. Fire.
Some intense colors are like, oh, get away.
So that makes sense.
It does. It totally makes sense.
Damn, the bush. I remember those
days.
I remember those days. Who would like to read number two?
I can do that.
Natalie.
Dear Art History Babes, literally just so many blessings on you guys. You've become my favorite podcast in such warm ray of sunshine to my day. I initially found you babes when I searched for iTunes podcasts on Frida Kahlo to listen to, and I absolutely fell in love with y'all. Aw, y'all. I am an architectural graphic designer, i.e. architects send me their blueprints and I make conceptual artwork for them. Sometimes I get to draw maps for people. I love drawing maps. Awesome.
That's a great
job. So that means I get to color all day and listen to podcasts all day. Your podcasts have not only encouraged me in my career as an artist babe, but in my non-commissioned artwork. I hope to have a website soon of my paintings and would love to send you that as soon as I get that up. Your podcasts have encouraged me to do painting commissions as well. At this point in time, I'm not accepting money for painting commissions, but I am accepting wine and conversation from the commissioner. Hallelujah. That was me. I feel that a good bottle of wine and a good conversation are so much more valuable than money. If I put my soul and emotions into a work of art, I want to share a good glass of wine with the commissioner. This may have been inspired by your podcast as well.
Oh my god, dude, I'm like crying.
This is fantastic. Anyways, I love you babes. It's so important and so needed to have such strong smart babes in the art world. Representation is everything. Everything is in bold. I love you guys. Oh my god. Haha. That is so sweet. And that is from
so
Brooke.
Brooke. And she also that is so kind. I know, it's so nice. Hold on. I think I still have it up. I hope I do.
I want to see her artwork so badly.
We have it. I'll find it.
Your job sounds real.
Like tell
real
us how
cool.
to get that job by the way. Like right.
Jeez. Also, your idea of having wine with your commissioner is a great idea.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And we like that too. Also, we want to get paid. So don't be afraid to get paid. paid.
For real. I mean, artists deserve to get paid. Like, it shouldn't be all about the money by any means, but people who create should get paid.
I totally agree, but I like her, her like balance between her work, where she is like creating art technically for architects and like doing that and making money off of it, and then the passion side. So it's like she's melded them in a way.
She's still getting paid.
And yeah, she's getting paid and she's getting something that's valuable to her in the conversation in wine. Like, that is the dream.
That is.
Brooke, that's, write a book and tell me how to live
that's my life. The goal. Like, that's the end goal for all of this. So yeah, we're totally about it. We've got your Instagram
we're
up.
We're on your Instagram right now.
And we're lurking. We're lurking hard.
I like it a lot. Yeah. Oh, Brooke, I'm a sucker for skin tones. I love you already.
They are beautiful.
Ooh. Oh my God, look at this babe.
This is so great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, next 15 minutes is just going to be us creeping.
I like those hands, girl.
That's amazing. Aw,
Brooke.
Okay, Brooke.
You're so awesome. All this is so cool.
Yeah, these are super fun.
I like everything you're doing. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Oh, I like that dark light. That looks like me.
Yeah, I like that.
You drew a portrait of me. I didn't even know that you...
Ooh, this is fun.
Oh,
this is amazing.
Femme power.
I really like your hands. The hands are just really fun and cool.
And hands are hard, girl. So more power.
Hands are the worst.
Hands and feet are brutal. Oh, Shell Silverstein.
Oh my God.
We could keep going.
Okay, we should stop. Yeah. We're the only person who knows what we're talking about. We're all like, people are like, okay, bye.
All right. Well, thank you for the kind listener mail. If you have any thoughts or questions for us, email us at arthistorybabes@gmail.com. Check us out on Instagram or at arthistorybabespodcast, on Twitter at arthistorybabes. Like us on Facebook. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/arthistorybabes. Is that all of them? Did I miss any of them?
I think you got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Go on arthistorybabes.com.
Yeah, just hang out on our website.
Just hang out.
And we're like dipping into the idea of merch. Like we're dipping our toe in the pool. So if anyone has suggestions or suggestions for places where we should reach out to get merch or all of the above, we would appreciate
any advice. Like something that you would buy from
us. What would you like a sticker, tote bag, what do you want?
They're selling all their stuff to grad students. You can buy anything that they own.
Exactly. We're just going to sell you our belongings.
If there's something like just so funny that one of us said from an episode that you want to see on a shirt or a tote bag or what
or like
have
if you,
you
want. If you want a lock of Jen's beautiful blue hair.
I'm giving it away.
For the right price.
Or if you want to get super meta about it, you could order a lock of Jen's hair and then she can send you grass like Salvador Dali did to Yoko Ono. It'll be this whole like thing between you.
I like it.
It'll just be an inside joke.
It'll be super meta, but like... We will make that experience happen.
I mean, I will legit send someone a lock of my blue hair for the right price. So,
so keep that in mind. Also, we mentioned potentially doing a meetup in Europe on our last episode about ancient Greek monsters.
Oh my God, that'd be crazy.
Yeah, mid-June. So if you are interested, email us about that. Yeah,
we officially are staying in Paris and Berlin and hopefully Amsterdam soon.
I think we're doing Amsterdam for...
We just need to have enough fish.
Yeah. A couple of days. We'll definitely be in Berlin. What were we saying? June 25th. We land in Berlin. So if you're familiar with or live out there and you want to direct us to some of the most wild clubs of Berlin.
She just wants to dance her heart out.
That's what I'm Berlin for. That's all I want to do.
That's my plan for Berlin.
You know, I'm going to drink beer. I'm going to eat like a, what are those?
Schnitzel?
I want like one of those big
sausages. It's not sausages.
I want to eat a big old bratwurst with sauerkraut. And I want to dance.
We can make that happen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel like we should let our listeners go.
Bye. We love you.
We've been ranting for a bit.
Bye.
The Art History Babes.
My microwave radiation super cancer.
That's going to show up on, like, questionnaires for people who have cancer in the future.
Did you microwave a peep from 2006? Call Berg and Jones.
The Art History Babes podcast is made possible by support from our lovely listeners via Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/arthistorybabes to help keep the Art History Babes going and for access to bonus content.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.